the list. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of thing the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli, and here with Robert Lindstrom, rising star of the financial consulate. Robert, how are you?
I am well, Drew. Thanks again for having me on for my second time.
Yeah. And one of the reasons we have you on tonight with us is because each of the advisors, there are 11 advisors in our firm, and each advisor has numerous niches. Maybe they have one, or maybe they have multiple niches. And one of yours is working with?
It's going to be focusing more on young professionals that are basically, they have a good opportunity to start making the kind of decisions they need to build wealth.
And our guest tonight is something that you really want to, as a young person, now would be the time to understand the things that our guest tonight is going to be talking about.
Oh, yeah. I read the book that's going to be talked about a little bit tonight, probably Millionaire Next Door, when I was pretty much just out of school, and I consider myself pretty lucky to have done so.
Was that out of high school, out of college?
That was college.
Well, we have Sarah Falal with us tonight, and she is, if I'm not mistaken, the daughter of one of the authors, and there were two authors of that book, right?
I believe so.
She'll tell us. And she's the president of Data Points, the science of predicting wealth, which I'm sure that our listeners are quite interested in. How do I know if I'm going to be able to accumulate wealth? Sarah, are you with us?
I am. Thank you for having me.
And your father was one of the authors of Millionaire Next Door, right?
He was. So Tom Stanley was my father, and he began his line of research on how individuals build wealth, several years ago, obviously, and wrote The Millionaire Next Door and The Millionaire Mind, among other books about kind of how individuals built wealth on their own.
Well, that was a great start for you to have a father as, who the book Millionaire Next Door is a timeless treasure in the financial industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So he, I was sort of on a different path. So I began my career in industrial psychology, so helping companies hire individuals, and really came into kind of learning what he had done later in my career, and obviously took a lot of that and started Data Points.
Well, that's fantastic. And your tagline says the science of predicting wealth. You really believe that you can look at people's personality traits and predict if they can become wealthy in the future?
Well, if you look at all of the research that has been done to predict how individuals will perform on a job, there's years and years, hundreds of years of research demonstrating that certain personality characteristics and certain patterns of behaviors actually predict how well someone will do on a job. So if you think about household financial management, we're all in that role in one way or another. And so what we've done is identify the characteristics of someone that can build wealth, and also, obviously, if they can't, how they can change their behaviors over time.
And so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 big ones, right? Is that what I'm seeing here? Conscientiousness. Why don't you go through them?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we've done is identified 6 behavioral patterns and experiences that really impact someone's ability to build wealth regardless of their age or their income. And those are things like frugality, which of course was featured prominently in The Millionaire Next Door.
Well, which is the concept of the book, right? That you're living in an average house and the guy next to you, you think he's just as average as you, but really he's a millionaire.
Exactly.
And that was back in the days when a millionaire was really a millionaire.
Right, that's right, exactly.
What year did your father write that book?
1996. So it came out when I was about a junior in college.
Right. So you go ahead. I'm sorry
to
interrupt.
Absolutely. So, so, you know, the other factors include things like confidence. So thinking about, you know, how we make financial decisions. Do I have the confidence and the self-esteem and self-efficacy to make those, you know, really tough decisions in some cases and stick with them? Also, we look at things like social indifference, which is, you know, do I care about what my neighbors are driving? Do I want to take the same vacations that I see others taking on Facebook? If you can kind of ignore all of that, you have a better opportunity to build wealth long term. And then the others include things like focus. So if you can focus on your financial goals, you'll have a better opportunity to build wealth. And also planning and monitoring. So if you're setting aside time, regular time, to plan and, again, monitor what's going on in your financial life, those are also behavioral patterns that impact long-term wealth building.
And they're not necessarily groundbreaking concepts, but they are the concepts that everyone needs to understand. That's what's so perfectly logical of what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great point. You know, they're not, this isn't exactly rocket science, but at the same time, when you highlight these kind of your standing or your clients, for example, standing on these different aspects and compare them to others, it can kind of be eye-opening for some individuals in terms of how they score on tests. That measure these types of things. The last one I'll mention too is responsibility. So that's that one that says, am I really responsible for what happens to my financial outcomes, or is someone else?
Yeah. So Sarah, you're going to have to hold with me. We're at 6:14. We have to take a pause for traffic. But when we come back, we want to go over these six factors and how people can determine if they have strong predictability, strong success, that they're going to be wealthy in the future based on the things that you've talked about. But right now, we got to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. One of the missions of our company is to create a model of the professional advisory firm. We do the radio show to demonstrate what we believe a true professional should be. Your financial advisor should be able to demonstrate the same depth of personal financial knowledge as we do on our radio show. If not, then you need a new advisor. For investments can easily be duplicated, but comprehensive knowledge takes years of learning and experience. We trademarked the financial physical in 1990 and have been building this model for 27 years. If you wonder if we are different, then just do a financial physical and see for yourself. The complete plan is free to you if our comprehensive planning does not prove to be overwhelmingly beneficial. This is how confident we are. Call 410-823-SAVE, that's 410-823-SAVE, to learn more, or go online at drewtig.com, that's drewtig.com.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Sarah Falal and her company. She's president of Data Points, the science of predicting wealth. And Robert, you went on the website and saw some of the things that they're doing, so why don't you go ahead and ask the question you wanted.
Yeah, Sarah, I saw that people can actually go on your website and take an assessment, right?
Absolutely. So we have, you know, obviously we love data. We are always collecting data, and we always want to be able to provide something back to individuals to let them learn about themselves. So right now we have a financial satisfaction assessment that's available that anyone can take and learn a little bit more about their financial wellness.
Okay, so if someone goes on and does that and scores well or poorly, either one, you know, what in general with the different characteristics, if someone scores bad, let's say, what are some of the things they can do to change that?
Well, you know, the assessment that's on our site, again, is measuring satisfaction. So how you're feeling not only about how things are going today, but also how things will be going in the future and kind of your perceptions of you know, security and things of that nature. So really the kinds of things that individuals can do to ensure that they're satisfied with their finances and are happy with the way things are going and how they're managing their finances at home is really to obviously, you know, implement a plan and stick to it. Certainly that's the first step. And you know, again, the idea of being secure with what's going on or satisfied with what's going on today is important, but it's also obviously very important to make sure you're happy with the way things are going for the future.
So, Sarah, you know, the six things that you mentioned, one of them you said was confidence to make a decision and stick to it and so forth. That confidence can come working with an advisor and just being confident that they feel the advisor has assessed the situation well for them and you're going to trust them and go forward with their recommendation. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to figure out it all themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we think, and again, so I come from the world of industrial psychology, we think of advisors a lot of times as an executive coach in a way. So you're out and really you're outsourcing part of that, the work that you're doing as that household financial manager to the financial planner. And so, absolutely, if you have confidence and are satisfied with that relationship and how the service that's being provided, I think that that's a way to develop confidence as well.
Now, your website is really designed more for advisors working with clients more so than the average individual coming to your website. Is that true?
Right, exactly. So where we put, for example, research that we're doing with individuals is really on the Thomas J. Stanley website. And so that still has, that's where we publish a lot of the research that we're doing for individuals. The final book that my father worked on and that I helped with and co-authored is coming out later on this year. So that will all be there on the thomasjstanley.com website.
Do you want to give us a idea what that book's going to be and the name of it, or you're not ready yet?
Yeah, so the name is something that's still up in the air a bit, but it is looking at The Millionaire Next Door 20 years later. So it's really looking at not only their behaviors, but also, like we were talking about earlier, the competencies that are required to build wealth and transform income into wealth 20 years later, looking at things that would impact how someone that's younger, for example, might build wealth given technology, healthcare, and education costs and things like that.
So, you know, I'm reading many of your blogs, and one of them, Investing Perspective, Sharing is Caring. You have a statement here. It says, over 20 years ago, Millionaire Next Door highlighted the importance of finding highly skilled professionals to advise us with respect to our financial affairs, specifically, and this is the quote, your ability to hire high-grade financial advisors is directly related to your propensity to accumulate wealth. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's just like hiring great individuals for your small business or for your organization. You know, your ability to find and hire and develop a relationship with advisors can transform how your financial path. And really what we were saying there, too, is, you know, making sure that the advisor you're working with is someone that's willing to spend the time to educate you, to help you develop in areas where, you know, you may not be as strong when it comes to building wealth.
But, you know, the reason that that really fascinated me is that, and this is my opinion, over 90% of the people who hire financial advisors are really hiring somebody who's more of a salesperson as opposed to somebody who's highly trained and skilled in tax planning and estate planning and investments and, you know, and so forth, and bringing that comprehensive wealth and being an educator, being fee-only, independent, not selling products, not taking commissions, but over 90% of the public, that's what they're hiring.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's quite a bit of education that continues to need to happen within financial services and by professionals that really are focused on developing the whole client. We just recently completed a survey looking at mass affluent individual investors and kind of their perceptions about financial planning professionals in general. And still about 65 to 70% still believe that all financial planners are trying to sell them something. So I think I totally agree with you.
So, you know, with the advisor, the optimistic thing is that companies like yours are prospering, and there are a lot of advisors that are now starting to become more professional advisors, and I'm sure that the majority of the people that you work with are that type of advisor.
That's right. That's exactly right. And they are focused on, less about the selling of a specific product and more about, developing a relationship, being fee-only, for example. We work with a lot of CFPs and a lot of younger advisors as well.
So if I'm not mistaken, your company also helps people that come there to find an advisor that seems to be a strong match for them. Is that true also?
Well, we don't quite do that. That's a great business idea, though, so I'll write that down. But, what we're hoping is that through what we're writing, both, on our blog as well as through the ThomasJStanley.com blog, that we're helping to educate individuals about what a financial advisor means and what they should be looking for. That's something that, we're not maybe doing directly, but certainly through the pieces and the articles that we write, we are.
Now, if you took one of the six of your top personality traits, which would be the one that you would say to our listeners tonight, look, if you're not willing to study these six and try to incorporate them and incarnate them into your life, just at least do this one. Would there be one?
Right. Yeah. So, I think the one that I would recommend that people just think about is this concept of what we call responsibility. And really that is accepting your role in your financial success. So either I believe that I can impact my financial success or I can't, or something else is. And I think even if you don't change necessarily your behavior, if you just kind of keep that in the back of your mind, you start making different decisions, right? So if I know that, that the way that I save and the way that I shop is going to impact my financial success long term, I might make a different decision when I walk into the store virtually next time, for example.
So that's interesting that you would have chosen responsibility, because I guess, you're looking at people and you're saying, you've got to be able to look and say, I'm 40 years old, I've been making good income, and I've got $10,000 accumulated. Mm-hmm. And maybe I have some responsibility in that.
Right, right. That's exactly right. I think frugality is another one as well. I mean, if I get to pick two, I would pick that one as well. That tends to be the strongest predictor of net worth, independent of age and income.
Well, we have to take our second pause for tonight to hear more about traffic out there. So if you'll hold with us, and we'll be back with the second half of our show, and we'll get more in depth on some of the things that can help predict wealth and lead you on a path of success in your finances. But right now, we're going to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Sarah Falal, and she is the president of Data Points, Science of Predicting Wealth, and the daughter of Thomas Stanley, who wrote the book Millionaire Next Door, which is a classic, an age-old classic in the financial industry. And, Sarah, you mentioned the concept of responsibility, and I have this one blog of yours where you talk about what types of clients do advisors find most challenging. Now, say, okay, well, the clients with complex financial needs. Now, you'd figure that'd be very challenging. You get somebody who's a very high net worth or sophisticated tax, real estate deals or business deals. You'd figure that's challenging. That's really challenging. Now, not very challenging to advisors. Clients who have a different perspective than their own, they have a different look on things and so forth. And, trying to help them to understand. No, not the most challenging. The two that were, big ones was clients who cannot accept responsibility for their actions. That's frustrating to an advisor, and clients who cannot stick to a plan. But the biggest one is clients who think that you should beat the stock market for them all the time. So those were the three big ones, and I find that absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, it's almost as if it's easy to manage those complex needs, right? Sort of the mechanics and how I can do that. Maybe you can talk to colleagues and, or, you know, I've got a client that kind of already looks like this. But when it comes to a client who is really desiring something that maybe isn't possible, right, beating the market, that's extremely challenging. And that's a lot of, you know, drawing on your interpersonal skills as an advisor, on your persuasion ability and things of that nature. So absolutely, that's what we found from a survey of advisors that we did recently.
Yeah, and I can honestly say that, you know, somebody come in and you say, well, you know, you realize that you're spending way too much and this is going to be the danger of this and so forth. And they're just totally, you know, disagree with you, want to fight with you over it. They're not willing to take the response. That just is, you say, look, you're just going to have to find a new advisor because I can't work with that.
Exactly. You know, I think that, I think, again, having those sort of more complex type financial or investment related issues or like estate planning issues, for example, pale in comparison to having someone that can't quite take responsibility for the fact that they take, you know, 7 vacations a year, but yet they, you know, don't have anything saved for their children's college education, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that where people have borrowed themselves into oblivion to put their children through college, and they're penniless at 60, 65 years of age, you know, and just, I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, part of what we talk about actually in the book that's coming out later is that, you know, there's so many, even for colleges, let's take education as an example, the Facebook factor of being able to broadcast to everyone that your child is going to this college or that college, is, I think, part of the reason why a lot of times there are individuals who will, like you said, borrow themselves to oblivion to pay for it, versus doing something that maybe isn't as traditional, going to a community college, you know, maybe not even going to college. There are other, obviously, a lot of other ways of earning a living, and it doesn't necessarily require a 4-year degree.
Yeah.
Sarah, you talked about the importance of frugality. How can we do a better job of being more frugal without just completely denying ourselves of anything but the basics?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. And I love the financial independence movement and a lot of those, there are a lot of great resources out there for how to do that. And again, it comes back, I think, to a plan. You're not necessarily denying yourself everything, but there has to be a plan, and you do have to compromise. And I think that whole concept of, you know, you really can't have it all is hard for folks to swallow and to believe, in essence.
Yeah. I like to say when I teach seminars on this exact topic is I want you to live today for today, but be certain that tomorrow is going to show up.
Right. That's a great point. Absolutely.
And then, you know, also, Robert, you already are married, but you get married, you know, because normally opposites attract, and you'll learn how to come to the middle real quick once you get married.
That's right. Absolutely.
Anyway, one of the other fascinating blogs that you had here was short-term investing, and the percentage of advisors that took a question and agreed or disagreed with it, and then the percentage of individuals that agreed and disagreed with it. So, you know, like, for example, this. It says, is it important to focus on short-term gains when investing? Now, you asked the question in a different way, but I'm just going to leave it at that. And you basically, most advisors said no, and but a lot, not the majority, but about 35% of individuals said, of course, it is important to focus on short-term gains when investing. Another one was following financial market news is an important strategy in investing. And about 85% of individuals said, yeah, of course. And about only 20% or so advisors said, yeah, maybe. And then, you know, frequently trading the account tends to be the most successful at investing. Barely 5% of advisors said yes, but almost 50% of individuals said yes. I mean, this is a total disconnect.
Absolutely. You know, I think, again, that goes back to the point that you made earlier that, you know, having advisors that are really looking out for their best interest involves, you know, education and educating their clients, you know, educating prospective clients as well through blogs and things of that nature that advisors are writing to share why it is that frequent trading may not be the best medicine for your portfolio and why market news and following it closely can lead to some really disastrous decisions related to investments.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, as we were talking about earlier is that most people, you know, they invest with people that they like. And I heard, it may have been you, but I can't remember who it was, said that trust can be faked. Knowledge and credentials and so forth cannot be faked. And there are a lot of financial advisors when markets are doing extremely well, like they are now,
yeah.
You know, most of their clients are thinking, you know, my advisor's just doing a smashing job.
Exactly. I don't know if I said that or someone else, but that's right. Everything looks rosy right now. And I think that the proof is in the pudding at how well an advisor has developed that relationship, has educated their client when the markets start to change and when things start to change. Because I think that the relationships that will last between an advisor and a client are really those that are based on, again, a focus on ensuring that they're successful for the long term.
Yeah, and I think that what most investors don't realize is it's those tax strategies, it's those tax planning techniques and all those other money saving and money wealth building strategies that you apply to a client is far more important than your portfolio, because most portfolios now are going to just monitor what the markets in general are doing.
That's right, exactly.
And, you know, anyway, it's a fascinating industry. We've got a lot still to talk about, and we're coming into our last quarter of our hour, but we have to take our last break, and we'll be right back after this with Sarah and talking more about data points and how to know if you're going to be successful in the future. Right now, we're going to go to traffic, and we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. This is for business owners and presidents of companies listening today. If you have a 401k in your company, then let me warn you that lawyers are hunting for you with good reason. 401k plans with less than 1,000 employees have been built around revenue sharing, or in my words, commissions. The Department of Labor has opened a door for lawyers to sue you on behalf of employees unhappy with excessive fees in the plan. They are correct, but the funny thing is the business owner has normally the majority of the money in the plan. You need a great plan for you and your employees, for everyone's retirement is dependent on it. We do a 401k review of your plan to help determine how to develop the best possible commission-free plan and keep the plan current. Call 410-823-SAVE, that's 410-823-SAVE, to schedule your 401k review. Everyone's retirement is dependent on it, so call 410-823-SAVE.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. That's the theme song of our show, and I was just curious, Sarah, do you find that to be one of the ingredients that if somebody doesn't put a, you know, an overriding and overarching importance to money itself, but other things in life? In other words, they want to do the best with it, but they're not putting it at the top. It's not everything to them.
Right. So I think that, you know, there are obviously a lot of individuals who focus way too much on finances and to the point where it becomes almost a clinical disorder. And that's not something that we measure, for example, with our assessments. But, you know, like anything, there's too much of a good thing, or you can be too focused on things. But again, because it's such a critical part of really your life management to be able to ensure that you have security for your household long term, you do have to pay, you know, again, some attention to it and ensure that it's part of a plan, whether, again, it's you doing that yourself or working with a financial professional.
So one of the blogs that I really found the most fascinating was the one where you say, did you buy an $11 million Xbox?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, again, you know, thinking through, balancing, what you want and what you need to save for tomorrow, I think is a continual piece that people struggle with. But again, there are some that are really high, again, on that factor that we call frugality, and that they're able to balance that need for wanting something and wanting to, again, have that Xbox or whatever it is they want to buy with a long-term financial plan.
So one of our associates a few years ago, we had a client that he and his wife every day would go to Starbucks and buy two Venti drinks and fancy ones, and every day, 7 days a week. And he calculated for them. He said, if you didn't buy that, in 20 years, you would have, I think it was like, I don't know, a few $100,000. And
right.
they just could care less. They just could care less. That was that, don't take responsibility type client.
Right, right. That's a challenging client for sure. I think again, I like Starbucks, especially at the holidays. That's fun. You can go have a eggnog latte or whatever. But I think that a lot of us, and I say us being a Gen Xer, I'll put myself in that camp, really have decided that what used to be just a treat every once in a while is now an everyday occurrence. And in order to build wealth long term, you do have to kind of shift your mindset to not, thinking through those purchases and how they're going to affect you long term, and really, reserving them for times when it's special.
Yeah. So we like to tell our clients that, if you want a budget, we're all with you. We're totally behind it if you want a budget. But the very least we want you to do is just watch your cash flow on a monthly, semi-annual, annual, every so many years, decade basis. Just monitor it. Just say, I spent $50,000 at Starbucks over the last 10 years. I spent $500,000 going out to dinner, whatever it is. Just see the number. That's all we ask you to do. Just look at the number. Have you ever done a study with this?
Right. So that is, that's really that planning and monitoring piece that we measure in our assessment, and that we counsel the advisors that work with us to focus on, which is, ensuring that your clients, if they have a low score on that factor and they're not willing to kind of, or they haven't in the past, they haven't set aside time, regular time, to do exactly what you're saying, that they build that into kind of their coaching and their behavioral coaching with their client.
Yeah, I was about 31 years of age when I started to do that myself. And I was just flabbergasted as how it impacted me and the things that I was, what I would consider, wasting money on. And I just didn't realize it, because $5 didn't sound like a lot of money. But when I added it up weekly, monthly, yearly, I started to say, that's a lot of money I'm wasting on this. So anyway.
Absolutely. Yep. I've tried that with my husband on occasion. Again, he's the financial manager within the household. And you're absolutely right. When you see those numbers in black and white, it's definitely, it's not just $5. That's absolutely right.
Sarah, I know you have the book coming out soon, but just in general, is there anything you're kind of on the horizon that you're working on that you're excited about in terms of the, financial psychology aspect of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are part of what we do, again, is we have assessments that are used by advisors with their clients, and our investor profile assessment is coming out, which measures different factors that could impact, or rather we measure psychological risk tolerance. So are you composed when the market starts dropping? What are your preferences for risk? What is your level of investor judgment? Do you make judgments that look more like you really like the short term, or are you really making decisions that will allow you to be successful in the long term. So that's coming out along with research, as I mentioned, around perceptions of individuals related to how they feel about financial services in general, and also looking at kind of how they learned how to become good investors. So was that their parents? You know, what kind of influence did their upbringing have on how they're making investment-related decision-making today?
So you have a line in one of your blogs that says this. It says, a confident but not overconfident investor who takes responsibility for financial outcomes, who can ignore trends and is generally frugal, is more likely to invest when the markets decline.
That's correct. Yep. So that is, you know, again, what part of our research, again, and we say the science of predicting wealth, but what we try to do is predict what someone will do by looking at actual outcomes. So we had a study that examined whether or not someone stayed in the market during the last decline, the last significant decline, or whether they actually sold everything, you know, and kind of just said, forget it, I'm out of here, or if they actually put money into the market. And so what we found, as you mentioned, was that those that were confident but not too confident had a better sort of investment-related decision-making.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but I'll never forget Warren Buffett used to say that the stock market is the only place that when markets are going up, everyone wants to buy. When markets are going down, nobody wants to buy. But if you went to Walmart and they scream, big screen television, 70% discount in aisle 12,
right,
people would run over there. If they called on big screen televisions, 450% increase in aisle 12, everyone would look at you like, what are you telling us that for? Who cares? But that's
Absolutely.
What we do in the stock market, and Bitcoin surely proved that beyond a shadow of a doubt within the last 6 months or so.
Absolutely. Yep. We've seen a lot of we've had a lot of discussions with advisors about their clients coming to them saying, hey, how do I do this? And yeah, it's been really interesting. Yep.
So, Sarah, is there anywhere that our listeners can go to get more information on you or the books that you and your father have written or writing or so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to datapoints.com, that's our site. From there, you can click over to The Millionaire Next Door and learn a little bit about how DataPoints connects back to that book. And you can also click on individuals and take our financial satisfaction assessment as well.
Don't you also have a newsletter of some sort?
So you can sign up for our email list on datapoints.com. There's a place to sign up and subscribe, and that will also let you know when the book's coming out and the title, which, again, like I said, is still up in the air.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it, and that'd be a great place to see the new book when it does come out and find out what the title will be. But we're out of time now, Sarah. We really want to thank you for spending this time with us and sharing with us the insight that you have in this area.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, Robert, do you have anything before we leave?
Nope. Thanks for having me on again.
All right, buddy. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.